Let's talk. John Brown.
Delighted to welcome onto the show my first guest. SAS, my trial by fire, true stories and life lessons from SAS selection. He's been on the show before, which seems like a couple of months ago, but we just worked out it was about 3 to 4 years ago. I'm delighted to welcome back a friend of the show, Des Powell. Des, how are you this morning, my friend?
I'm fantastic. Listen, thanks very much for having me on the show. I appreciate it very, very much.
Listen, it is more than a pleasure. What I really like about this book, because when we had you before, you'd be talking about your first book, which you wrote with great, Damien Lewis is absolutely brilliant. He's been on my show a couple of times. And I'm just thinking, because as the listeners know, I had a little bit of a situation coming into work this morning. And, you're faced with a crisis, you're faced with something out of your control, and you can either start screaming and shouting, and I'm only on my third coffee, so that was going to happen, and cry and get your teddy's fur all soggy. But your book is about how your training, in selection to the SAS, can be transferred to everyday life. And I'm not saying talking in a way that makes sure your invoices get paid on time, but in a way that we can navigate, the rocky coasts and hidden reefs of everyday life, Des.
Yeah, I think what it is that, people say, but you've been in the SAS, Des, you can cover most problems. And what I'm saying to people out there in this book is this: no, you don't have to be in the SAS, you don't even have to be in the military. But there is a way of navigating life's problems. And let's face it, life's stressful, isn't it? I think what it is with those in the military is that we're exposed to stressful situations all the time. In the SAS especially, it says it on the can, doesn't it? It's going to be a difficult situation. It's going to be stressful. So what we are good at is that they put us into very, very difficult, negative situations, but they want to bring about a positive outcome. So transferring that to Civvy Street is that because I've had probably the worst situations, is that in Civvy Street, I can tend to scale it. And like you this morning, instead of getting out the car and you want to punch everybody and you want to tell everybody, you want to do some chest poking and what have you, I know you're better than that anyhow. So what you do, you just go, hang on, I've been through some bad situation, I can navigate this. And you tend to come about and you go, it's not the worst thing happening. It is annoying me, but I can get around this situation. And really, that really is what the book is about.
Now, you see, the closest I ever came to sort of doing anything with the military was like CCF. And I put my hand up, I was the worst shot in the North Staff CCF by miles. Trust me on this one. So I know absolutely, and apart from, having an interest in military history, et cetera, but one of the things that I suppose that it teaches you, because people think SAS, and a lot of people think of, and again, my generation, Lewis Collins and Who Dares Wins and all that, but it's all sort of hairy chested and ridiculous moustaches and swinging in through the windows and all that. But it's interesting you say, one of the main things you take from your training is that you have to keep in control. There's no point going full Viking berserker every 5 minutes. And although they may think SAS is coming in, it's going to be, rogue heroes and, blowing airfields outside Cairo. But the main thing is to be in control and be focused. Because if you lose control, that's when the bad stuff happens.
Yeah, agreed. I think we have a reputation, don't we, in the SAS, of getting the job done. And if the job has to be done, well, then we go in and do it. But for most of the time, truthfully, we are gatherers of information. We try to do things covertly, not to be seen, because a lot of the time it doesn't need that attitude of let's get the job done. It actually needs a more gentle approach. So, yes, in the regiments, they do teach you this control. I remember coming from the paras, which is full on, you stick out your chest, I'm the best, let's do it, let's go for it. And I mention all that in the book. But when you actually move to the regiment, Hereford, into the SAS, they want a more quieter guy. They want a guy who's got that strength and that guts and that determination, but they need this control. They need a grown up. Okay. And because they will put you into situations where you are not just knocking people, on their backsides. You actually need to negotiate. You actually need to reason. You actually need to be able to talk. Okay. And sort problems out, properly, not always okay, how people think about the SAS. So yes, answering your question is that when we go to the SAS, they want, as we call it, the grey man, a guy that can be a grown-up and a guy that can control his emotions.
What was the, because you're in the Paris, so what was, and you know, they are you know, they are famous for their esprit de corps, should we call it?
Yes.
What, yeah, go on.
I was just going to say in the book, the book is centered around the selection process, which is P Company of how to get into Paris.
Yep.
And then how I went from the Paris of the selection process of how to get into the SAS. And the two are different. But yes, you're right. The Paris also have a reputation, and it tends to be a louder version of the SAS. It's big, it's bold, it's brash, it sticks your chest out. I'm the best in the world. I jump out in airplanes and I can knock everybody on their backside. And you know, Summit, that is needed at times.
Yeah.
That is needed when you've got to go in and get the job done. And I think what is good about the book is that we are talking really about personal development, about controlling the actual mind, actually controlling the psyche of a person. But when the publishers come to me and say, right, we're thinking about personal development, I go, I want a different bent on this. I go, I want a book. I want a center about the Paris, center about the selection of both those units. But then I want to tell stories, and then from them stories, I want to give the audience, if you like, lessons learnt. What did I learn from that? And in a way that has a personal development feel. And as you can appreciate, in the military, we're doing personal development every single day. We get out in bed, 6 o'clock. We're thinking about tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, 2 years from now. We go out, we do some physical, we're planning, we're creating. So the personal development side for a military personnel is very, very easy. But I didn't want a pure personal development book. I wanted a lessons learned, if you like.
Here's the thing, because, you know, as I said before, Paris are elite regiments, selection process difficult. And then, yes. So you've been through that, you know, excuse me, you've got your wings and all that sort of stuff. And then you've got, and you think, right, I'm going to go for the regiment and go for the SAS. And yeah. So you must bring the I'm the best that there is, I'm a para. And the whole thing with an awful lot of militaries is, for a very good reason, breaking down the man and building him up again, not just leaving him broken, which is, you know, the worst thing you can do. So you go in as an elite unit. Were you expecting to be broken down again and built up again? And you know, and second part, what is that first day of selection like? Because it's not like you're walking in from another regiment. You've already done presumably what you consider the toughest yard. So what's that? Did you on the first day think, hang on a second, you know, I quite like keeping the what's it hat on. What I've got to let myself in for?
Yeah, answering your question there, I was coming up to the end of my time in the Paris, if you like, and I thought to myself, I can sign back on. It was really two. I could go out to Civvy Street, which scared me.
Yeah.
Three really. I could stay in the Paris, which was good. I could have had a full career. But then I thought, if I want to get serious, there's only one place you can go, and that's Hereford, that's the SAS. And I wanted to get really serious. So that's what I did. And yes, then when you go on selection, everybody knows, you know, about the reputation of the regiment. And I know it's going to be the hardest thing I've ever done. So again, I prepared properly. You know, I brushed up my skills military-wise, and I got myself very, very fit. I did what I had to do because I knew that it was going to take everything. And then answering even further, just to give it context, is that when I arrived on the first day, you can imagine there was approximately 280 guys. Okay, this was day one of 6 months. Okay, and we're all stood there. Okay, 280 guys all stood there, and we're getting a briefing by one of the instructors. And firstly, what surprised me is that he's talking normally to us. Hello, guys. Welcome to Hereford. We're looking forward to you. And I'm thinking, oh, this is a bit strange. Normally I have instructors screaming and shouting at me. And then what he said was, he says, before I give you a briefing of what's going to happen over these next few weeks and months, he says, can everyone just look around at each other? I thought, okay, so everyone's now looking at each other. Okay, 280 guys.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around and I'm thinking, right, they look fit. He looks apart. He looks like a go faster guy. He's got all the equipment, et cetera, et cetera. And then what he said then, he says, with inside 4 to 5 weeks, you'll be less than 50 guys left. Okay. And then that 50 will go on to the out to the jungle. And the very next day, so he gave us a brief, and then we all turned up next day. And next day, there were 5 guys that didn't turn up next day.
Right.
And they did that purposely. They did it. They're talking to you as a grown up. They are telling you exactly what's going to happen. And they know that that would psych a lot of people out. And it did do. It psyched at least 5 guys out. And that's all part of selection. They are saying that if you can't deal with what I've just told you to do, and by the way, I've told it to you very, very plainly, okay, I'm very grown up and as a, you know, as it should be told. And by the way, do we push in another thing? They were telling really everyone that this is about self-discipline. And that can be the hardest discipline of all. And so that was start of selection. And I'm thinking, wow, I better just take each day as it comes.
Here's the thing, Des. Interesting. I'm not going to get all deep and meaningless on us because it's only get up to 10:30 in Spain. But interesting. Self-discipline, right? The mark of a man, the mark of character is what you do when nobody's looking and nobody knows about it. Is that not the case?
Yes, I think that's the definition of an integrity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, is doing the right thing when no one's around, when no one's watching you. And I think that's probably the essence of up at the regiment. Self-discipline, as you can appreciate, is that you're applying for a job. You're applying for a job which is going to be a lifelong, if you like, and they need a certain individual. And you're going to be put under very, very stressful situations. And then not only stressful situations, but they're going to tell you what to do, a task, if you like, a mission. You've got to carry this out the best. You're going to be by yourself or with basically in small groups, okay? And you've got to carry this out truthfully because you're going to be by yourself. In other words, nobody's going to be watching. You know, nobody's going to be pushing you along. Nobody's going to be cheering you on and what have you. But they want a positive outcome. And I always used to say this to people. The SES puts you in very, very stressful situations, but they want you to bring about a positive outcome. And really, that takes a certain type of individual. And I think the baseline is that you've got to have integrity. And integrity is, as you say, is that doing the right thing when no one is watching you.
And here's the other thing. You mentioned the officer, I presume, who was saying, you know, good afternoon, gentlemen, welcome to Hereford. And, you know, we'll be flying at 30,000 feet or whatever. But, you know, in a nice controlled manner. And, you know, one of my father's good friends was an officer. He's a gentleman called Malcolm Kluby. And he was an officer in the 70s in the regiment. And nicest guy, you know, absolutely. But he's a, you know, a public school boy, you know, the whole thing. But he says the great thing is that you do not listen to somebody's accent or go to their background. So if you listen to Kluby, you think, oh my goodness, public school boy, you know, fnar. And you listen to somebody else who's come from Durham, but they're all the same. It doesn't matter. You do not judge the proverbial by its cover, which we are all guilty of to a certain extent. Because if you speak in a certain way, they think, oh, well, you know, he's not as good as me, or I'm not even good as him, or he's got the advice because he sounds like he's got a plum stuck in it, you know, he can't move the silver spoon in his mouth. And again, that's a fatal mistake.
Yeah. People always said to me when they meet me and our guys, my mates, they always say we expect a guy who's 6'5", 25 minutes across the chest, the tin of rats of grease in one hand and a black whip in the other. When really what they've got a 5'8" Yorkshireman, can't understand what he's on about, and it don't look like it can lift out heavier than a can of beans. I think probably the best way to answer that is that what they used to say in the regiment is that we need you extremely fit, but you don't have to like fitness. And most guys up at Hereford weren't into fitness. And what I mean by that, didn't go to the gym and didn't lift weights or whatever, but they were extremely fit. And what I mean by that, they were job fit. They could carry the tasks out. You know, they could be a good soldier. And to be a soldier out in the field is hard work. You're carrying lots of weight. You are tabbing that, marching lots of miles. And then you're cold, you're in the wind, the rain, the snow. And plus then you've got to carry out this negative task that has been given to you. And I think, as I explained to people, is that as long as you are fit to do the job, Well, then that's the main thing. And by the way, we didn't have any organised physical training in, sessions at Hereford. They used to leave the fitness side to you. Now, that's self-discipline again. Now, if you wasn't fit for task, in other words, if something come up and you wasn't fit enough, obviously someone would have a chat with you, but everybody was. And that is a test of great self-discipline.
And the other thing is the fact that if you are physically fit, or you're fit for the task, as you said, and anybody who's played a team sport will know this as well, if you don't have that level of fitness, then you are worried about you trying to breathe, your brain's all foggy, you're concentrating on getting air into your lungs, you're thinking, I can't do that. So you can't think rationally. If you're gulping in air, or you think, I can't do this, or, you know, on a day-to-day situation, and I don't mean saying that, listeners, you've got to be able to do, you know, the 5-minute mile or something, but if you have a level of fitness that you don't have to worry about that, or if even if you have some, you know, you have some special ability, as long as you get to a state where you have a level of fitness where you can concentrate on the task in hand, that's what we're talking about fitness, isn't it, Des? Not the whole thing about, oh, well, I've just done a marathon, now I'm going to think about doing that. It's about being able to be clear enough to concentrate.
Yes, agreed. You know, I remember the RSM once saying, he said, you know, if you can't do selection and have a life in the SAS on beer and fags, so you shouldn't be here. And that was the mindset then, sort of thing. And they didn't like anybody taking protein drinks or go faster drinks and what have you. Again, actually, it's quite a nice mindset, because they used to say, they used to go, look, guys, we don't want bodybuilders up here. And I mean that respectfully, because a few of my mates are into it. What they're saying is, we don't want people that need to show off what they've got. We need guys that are the green man. We need them fairly quiet. We need them getting on with the task. And by the way, okay, all the protein drinks and the go faster stuff and what have you is not going to do you any good when you're in the jungle, or you're in the Antarctic, okay, or you're in Europe, you know, in the European theatre. A lot of these things don't do you any good at all. So that mindset I quite liked, is that it's over to you. You've got to keep yourself fit. We need self-discipline. We need you to have a realistic approach on fitness, not necessarily gym fitness. We need job fitness. We need you ready for task. And they used to say, when the bell rings, we need you to be ready.
Now, it's all this so far so good. Everything's going swimmingly. I'm fit. My mental state is whatever. I'm not going through the SAS selection posters on beer and fags. Chance would be a fine thing. One of the things that you highlight, because, you know, it'd be very easy to say, well, I did this and then I did this and I'm an incredible human being. But life throws you curveballs, Des. I mean, just generally, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You can be halfway across the Malaysian jungle, or whatever we call it these days, or you can be, you know, pushing a pen in Croydon, and then something happens and unexpectedly, and you have a setback. And it's very easy for people to say, oh, well, you know, it's not for me, it's, you know, fudge it, you know, I'm going to do something else. And you had a stumble, was it an injury, or deselected, that had to go again? And
yes,
that is, you know, it's the old Rocky thing, isn't it? It's not how hard you hit, it's how you get back up again.
Yes, it is. And talking about curveballs, yeah, you know, people say, well, Des, because you're in the SAS, you can do with anything, because you've dealt with a lot of experience. I suppose there is something to that. But as I said to people, I say, I still feel pain like anybody else. I still bleed like anybody else. I'm still scared in certain situations, just like anybody else. Probably what's different with us is that we get exposed to it more often. And because we get exposed to it, is that we get a little bit used to it each time you do it. So then if a curveball does come up, you say to yourself, do you know something, I don't like this, but I've had some really bad, difficult situations in the past and I dealt with them.
Yeah.
So the chances are I can deal with this. And again, I mentioned that in the book. I think the more exposure that you have to difficult situations, life itself, when it happens, you're able to deal with that problem when it comes along. In fact, let's face it, things are always going to happen in life that you don't like, whether it's the lowest or whether it's the highest of difficult situations. To some people, it knocks on the back. And as my mate said, Des, SAS, this and that. And I go, yes, but everything's scaled. As a friend of mine says to me, Des, just because you're in the SAS, your stresses are no different than somebody that works in the supermarket. And you know something? That's right, because stresses are scaled, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a bit of a personal question, but do you find yourself talking to yourself a lot? And I mean that to pep yourself up, you know, the long talks. No, because, you know, apropos of nothing, you know, I'm a freelance. So there have been times when I've had literally in my pockets, and I'm thinking, and then you look at yourself in the mirror and go, you've been here before. You've always got out of it before. And anybody's going through a tough time, we're still on the planet. So therefore, you do have the skill set to get through it, whether you've been on selection training or you've been loafing on a beach in Marbella for most of your life.
Yeah, no, you're right there, is that even today, you know, when I'm writing a document, I've got to thank goodness for spell check, you know, because, you know, I left school with, you know, with hardly any education. And, you know, some, I still feel them butterflies. And then just as you said, all of a sudden I have to kind of just grab myself, give me a little bit of self-talk and go, hang on a minute. You know, you've done this, you've done that. And you know, not being the big and not sticking my chest out, but you just go, I've been in more difficult situations than this. Why are you feeling a bit nervous? And it's as I say in the book. Yes, what you said, I am giving myself a talking to. I am saying, come on, you can do this. Come round to it. Give yourself a bit of a team talk. But I realize that this is normal. This fear, that's what it is. And there's only two fears. You know, the fear of, am I good enough? And then the fear of, well, what if I fail? And that is normal. And that was the same when I went up at Hereford. What if I'm not good enough? What if I fail? Well, guess what? What if you pass? What if you pass with flying colors? And the thing is, I still feel it today. What I realize is fear. False expectations appear in real. I heard, by the way, that's not mine. I heard it years ago. And I thought, oh, I quite like that. And it is. You think of the worst scenario and it's normal to feel fear. It's the fear, okay, that kind of just stops you a little bit and you just go, hang on, I've had experience of this. I've felt it before. I need to push through. There was a lady years ago called Susan Jeffers who written a book called Feel the Fear, But Do It Anyhow. And I've still got that book. And that's what I do. I feel it. And then I just move forward.
And how important is kicking the ego into touch? Because we are hotwired and people think, oh, it's SAS, it's independent, it's a whole thing. No, it's team sport. I mean, it is how we are hotwired not to ask for advice, for experience, for help. And because real men and women too, and whatever else you're identifying as this morning, you know, real men and women don't ask for help. Rubbish. You ask for help. You ask for experience because 9 times out of 10, people go, right, what you need to do is this. And you must have been through that. You know, I've been through that with my life. You multiply it by 10 in your experience, Des. Ask for help.
Yeah, I do this even today. You know, I've got best friends, you know, friends in the military, even civvy friends. I have a small circle and, you know, I love them all to bits. I respect them and they do the same with me. So I feel confident to go into that. And it might be a project that's coming up. It might be a new venture. And I actually said to them, in fact, just recently I was out in Dubai and I've got a friend out there who's a best mate of mine. And I go, look, his name's Jamie. And I go, look, I'm thinking of doing this, Jamie. I'm thinking of doing that and whatever. And firstly, you know, we have a bit of a funny session. It gives me a bit of a slagging and going, hey, you puff while you're doing that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. But then it's serious. And he goes, yeah, okay, you've asked me advice. That's what you're doing. So answering your question, I used to do that when I was in the regiment. If I weren't sure, I would go to the old and bold guys, okay, and say, look, I'm not too sure about this. I don't have the experience. They go, okay, firstly, you've done the right thing. You've come to me. Then they would tell me how to go about it. And again, I've mentioned that in the book. And again, the more you do it, the more experience you have, the better you become. But I still haven't got away from that. I think it's a great tool for you to be able to go to someone that you respect, close friends, best friends, and be able to ask them, even if it's just a case of, I'm going to do this, but I want to bounce this off you. And I found myself always doing that. And I think it's a very, very good strategy stroke tool to use. In other words, ask someone that you are close, especially when you're nervous about something going forward.
Also, because, you know, we've been through that thing we do not talk about when we were all locked down for a while. And a lot of us thought, oh, well, it's quite nice, you know, doing Zoom meetings and talking in a room and not meeting people. But isolation is an absolute killer, Des, isn't it? I mean, people, and if you don't get out and interact, you can find yourself being in an echo chamber of one yourself and your thoughts will get you mucked up and you'll end up just sort of coasting.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we obviously saw it over the COVID period, didn't we? And a lot of people have suffered. I think we're sociable beings. We are meant to socialize, aren't we? We're meant to be in groups. We are meant to speak. And, you know, I think we feel energy from each other. In the regiment, you find yourself on tasks sometimes in small groups, and it may be for, you know, long periods of time. And again, this is something that you have to get used to. You can feel your body kind of going down sometimes, and you recognize what it is. You need that interaction with people. Luckily, we work very closely in our groups, in our own troops. We all know each other very, very well. And by the way, we learn to recognize this. If like Des has been a bit strange over a certain period of time, someone would approach to me and go, Des, you need to talk about anything. And is there anything wrong? So what is good is that we all know we have a saying up here that we all come through the same sausage factory. We all come through selection, and selection has selected us. So we all have something in common. We're all here for a reason. So therefore, we don't feel embarrassed. We don't feel scared. It doesn't bother us that, you know, I can go to someone and say, do you know, someone, I'm not feeling my best. You know, I've been going through this, that, and the other. And it's surprising, you know, these big, tough, burly men that are, that we have the reputation of being, how kind of down to earth and kind, if you like, and listening to what you've got to say.
Yeah.
At the end, they'll give you a good slagging and tell you off and tell you to stop being silly and what have you. But at least you're able to go and speak to someone. And I think the isolation, especially what everyone's been going through, I think has really been a real problem. And we do recognise that at Hereford.
One of the things, I was looking at a newspaper the other day, which you are in, because it's got a review of your book, and it talks and it talks about this you being like literally second on the first on the scene on an accident, and you basically your training or whatever kicks in, and I just, because it's there's an accident situation, people are trapped in a car, and you muscle memory, whatever, kick. And the reason I'm saying this is not to say, hey, you know, Jimmy Big Pants or whatever, but I just remember because my father was a professional racing driver, and he was talking with some friends, and there was a crash at a race in Kyalami, and a friend of his was trapped in the car, and everybody ran around, and one guy just basically froze, and so he was handed a screwdriver, and they said, take this panel off the car, right? Car wasn't on fire or anything. It wasn't doing anything to help per se, but it was, he could then get on with that task and not concentrate on the guy who was in some pain. It was just do something. Just don't stand there and freeze. Just do something. And I suppose in your case with the car accident that you came on, it was a case of everybody else is standing around looking, going, what do we do? And it's just do something. As long as you're not putting yourself in immediate danger. It's the action. It's the kinetic force. If you start doing something, something else will kick in, and therefore you can do that situation. And I'm not saying that we're going to leave now and rescue people from motor accidents. But if you don't react and start the snowball rolling, then it won't pick up momentum. So if you've got a task that you think you can't do, if you don't start taking the panel off, or just writing the first line of the book, or doing the whatever, you know, putting the undercoat over, then it's never going to get done. So just do something, and a solution will present itself.
No, fully agreed with what you've just said there. And in the military, anyhow, they always say in difficult situations, it's better to do something than nothing at all. Just do something. And then you'll create momentum. And in this particular situation, like most difficult situations, is people go into stress. And as you said, sometimes they just freeze. Or they're not sure what to do. And what it was, they'd been car accidents, and some cars had collided. And you could see people in the car were still sat there. They were in stress mode.
Yeah.
And of course, as I said earlier on, in the military, is that you have these stresses, but because you're exposed to them more often, is that you tend to get used to them. You still feel scared. Your heart's still racing. You know it's going to be a difficult task, you know, but you just go, I've got to move forward. I've got to do something. And what it is in the military, we have drills. Drills indicate that you do something automatically. You know, we have medical drills that we do when we're in a medical situation. You know, we have weapon training drills when we're in a difficult situation. We have all sorts of drills. So in the military, the reason we have drills is that when we go into a difficult situation, a shock situation, is that we're going to drill mode. And in this particular case, all we were doing really is getting people out of the car. We need to get to out. You know, the car, in fact, it actually burst into flames. We need to get you out. We need to do this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what it is, people are not exposed to that on a daily basis. In the military, and especially in the regiment, you tend to expect that you are going to be exposed to difficult situations. So in a way, you train for them. And when you train for them, they tend to become a drill-like scenario. So we always talk in the military, drill, 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 because when you are stressed, everything tends to close. We call it, you know, where your mind blows up. We call it the mind blows. It doesn't know what to do. But if you go into a drill situation, you just naturally move forward and then bring about a positive outcome to that very stressful situation.
The book, I mean, is it a case of you want people to read this through in one go, just like refer to it, get a few bits, like a pointers for the day, rather than sitting down one big chunk and thinking, and now I'm going to learn to think like Des and my life will be fine?
I think there's two ways. One, for the people that like a good story, is that there's lots of little stories in it, you know, and I think they'll like that, for the people that like stories, you know. And so people can, you know, if they're not bothered about the personal development side, it's still a good book to read. And I'm still talking about SS situations. I'm still talking about tasks that I had in the Paris. So for people that want to read a good book, yeah, they've got a book for it. And for people then that want to learn life's lessons, if you like, as I call it, lessons learnt from the stories that you read, and each story at the end, I tend to go, from that story, I learned A, B, C, D, and E, and whatever, and I give a scenario. So for those people, they'll go, ah, right, I've got a bit of Zen from Des here. Zen Des, you know. But seriously, if you want to read a good book, you still got good stories, and the guys, the personal development, yeah, lessons learned. It's not a strict personal development book, I like to point that out, but there is life lessons that you can learn. And just probably there's a third one. I think you'll just find it, you know, downright interesting, I think. I like to think that anyhow.
And just to let people know, I'm looking at Des now and I can't see any dream catchers. I can't see any wind chimes or anything that looks like a crystal in the background. So it's common sense as well, isn't it, Des?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's you know, some people can go, hang on, you know, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. And I think a lot of the time, I think people, you know, it's like when you see all these training regimes, you know, I brought out this and they call it this. What it is, it's a bunch of exercises put together and all you've done is renamed it, sort of thing. And I think it's the same with this. What I do like, probably an important side, is that I get feedback from people. And I really do like it that the civilian population out there, I mean that in a nice way, we always tend to send military and civil, is that they've got a great respect for our military. We have the best military in the world, without a doubt. And they have great respect for the Paras. I can only speak for the Paras because I was in the Paras, and especially the our civilian population have great respect for the SAS regiment. And that in itself, you know, makes me proud. You know, when people talk very, very positively about our military and especially about the Paras and the SAS. And it was nice that the publishing company got in touch with me and said, Des, would you like to go a second time around? And I go, yeah, can I do it this way? They went, yes. And so for me, I quite like it that people still fly the flag for our military.
The book is called SAS, My Trial by Fire, True Stories and Life Lessons from SAS Selections by Des Powell, who's speaking today. People, if people want to follow you online, Des, where's the best place to say hello?
Yeah, I always said to him, the easiest one, I've got a website now. What about that? Oof. I'm all kind of organized now. And most people, they just go on Google, and if they put Des Powell's official website, they'll see my website there, good pictures, they'll see the books on there, and they'll see how they can get in touch with me, talks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, listen, also you can order, go onto the TRE webpage and you'll find the book cover. He's the one without the mask, by the way. And you can just click on the link and you can order it from there. The book is called SS My Trial by Fire. Let's not leave it another 3.5 years before we speak again, Des, eh?
No, well, do you know something? Here's one, is that the publishing company have hinted, only hinted, that there may be a third, and you never know. Hey, put it this way as well, is that the books, is that we see that people get interested in them, you never know, there may be a documentary, and there may be a film, you never know. What about that?
Well, hey, even worse, it could be a musical and a dance number, so that is even more face your fear and no, do it listen, anyway.
If we're going to have someone to play my spot, my part, they've told possibly Dave and Stratham, what about you? Are you up for it?
I could be the plucky best friend in the back who gets taken out. Who you know those five guys who didn't turn up the next day? Hands the air, there you go. This book is called SAS Trial by Fire. It's by the brilliant Des Powell. Des, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
And it has for me. Thank you very much. And can I just say thank you to all the people out there? I get some lovely feedback. So thank you very, very much to everyone.
Des Powell, have a great day.